we look forward to sharing that with you. Great. And we are recording, so everyone is welcome to watch this again in case you disconnect at any point in time, or share it with your colleagues as well. Can we move to the next slide? Great. So I'm Julie Taft. I'm joining you from our humanitarian hub, which is based in Bangkok. And I work here with the humanitarian team where we support MAs in each of the regions to prepare for emergencies and respond to emergencies. And I have been with the hub since October of last year, so only about 9 months old with IPPF, but very pleased to be with you all today. Next slide, please. So today we are going to start with an overview of the humanitarian hub and humanitarian programming within IPPF. And then we will hear from our MA in Venezuela about the ongoing work there in the COVID-19 environment. Then we will move to our MA in Afghanistan and hear about how they have been adapting their strategies to the COVID environment. And then we will hear about a particular response in the Pacific to the Tropical Cyclone Harold, which was undertaken during the COVID outbreak in three of our Pacific islands there, and how the MAs coped with that. And then we will open up for Q&A and welcome discussion, comments, insights from all of you. Okay, thanks. Next slide. So the way to run this best would be if everyone could please stay muted throughout the webinar. Please do feel free to use the chat to say hello or ask questions or raise any technical issues that may come up. We will be recording this webinar and sharing the link at the end. And when we go into the question answer, please raise your hand or use the chat box to notify us that you have a question, or you can go ahead and write into the chat box. And then I will direct it to our speakers so that they can answer on behalf of their own programming and their teams. And at the end, we'll be sharing the PowerPoints. I'd also like to mention that we are preparing another humanitarian-themed COVID webinar, which will be in French, and we'll be featuring our French Francophone MAs in the next 2 weeks, so please do look out for that as well. Next slide. Great. So we do have some esteemed panelists with us today. Yes, next slide, please. We will start with our colleague Kea, who is our Senior Capacity Development and Partnerships Advisor for the Humanitarian Hub. I'm sure you know many of you know her through her passion and support for preparedness work in our humanitarian and vulnerable environments. And she will be providing an overview of the humanitarian hub work and humanitarian programming at IPPF. So please, Kea, take it away.
Great. Thanks so much for that introduction, Julie, and hi, everyone. Before we get started, like Julie said, into the individual MA presentations, which will give us much more insight into COVID and how it's working in different humanitarian settings, I wanted to spend a bit of time giving a brief overview of some of the key issues that we're seeing in humanitarian settings and some of the actions that are being taken to address these. Sorry, bear with me with the slides. Okay. So COVID-19 is a particular concern for humanitarian settings in countries that are experiencing or vulnerable to things like conflict, mass displacement, reoccurring natural hazards, because it has because it has an impact, to be able to magnify the impact of COVID because of underlying factors. So although we're not seeing the numbers necessarily at the highest in these settings, we know that the factors that are already pre-existing or there have potential to have huge impact on mortality and morbidity within these settings if COVID-19 is to reach. And what you see on the slide is an explanation around some of those key factors. And that's including, we're already dealing in a lot of these settings with weak health systems and populations with lots of comorbidities. So health infrastructure and facilities that already pushed the brim to be dealing with the demands on their services, as well as populations that are suffering from illnesses like TB, waterborne diseases, as well as, TB, waterborne diseases and other underlying key health issues like malnutrition, which have the potential to make the impact worse. We're dealing in these situations with great displacement, crowded conditions where water and sanitation is already difficult to imagine. So if you think about places like Cox's Bazar and the camps in Bangladesh, where there's over 900,000 people living in cramped conditions, and you think about some of the social distancing and hand washing requirements that we're being asked to do, and imagine the impossibility of that in some of these settings. In a lot of contexts, we're already seeing in places like Car, where there's great food insecurity, you have volatile markets and chains where prices are going up, supply systems are easily disrupted, economies and currencies are also fragile, combined with, like I said, this displacement and these continuous hazards, which again can exasperate the situation. We know from experiences in numerous humanitarian settings that populations such as asylum seekers and refugees already have challenges in accessing services. They're marginalized because of their status and compared with many citizens. So imagine this in trying to compare and navigate around accessing COVID testing or treatment support. So these are all compounding factors. And those mechanisms that we normally rely on within systems to provide the protection, to provide the rule of law and the legal conditions, aren't there in these systems. So we're looking at increased vulnerability for vulnerable populations such as women and girls, which then magnifies in these settings. And the reality is it's often not one thing occurring at one time. It's a multiple of factors, including conflict, climate hazards, displacement, general and short shocks within the system that people are trying to deal with and navigate that make meeting the basic necessities within their life already a challenge. So on top of this, when you're looking at COVID and the restrictions being put both indirectly and directly through it, you can see that the potential for impact is great. So in recognition of this, actors working in this space, humanitarian actors, which include things like UN agencies, NGOs, civil society and donors, have recognised the need to focus on countries that have either existing humanitarian settings or are vulnerable to falling in this space. And they've developed a COVID-19, a global humanitarian response plan to COVID-19. And it's at this stage is affecting around 63 countries and looking at over $6 billion. And its aim is to serve the most vulnerable within these situations and existing settings. And it's looked at not only the health impact, but it's looked at across the different sectors, what's the likely impact of COVID and that it's having and that it can have, and looking at what should be the strategy and the response plan and the idea for this to be able to help mobilise resources and advocate for the needs of populations in humanitarian settings. And for us, what's important to recognise, it does recognise sexual reproductive health, GBV, and this is through the minimal initial service package for reproductive health in crisis, which many of you would be familiar with because that's the international standard of care in humanitarian settings. It has strong recognition of the gendered impact we're seeing from COVID and an emphasis on working with local actors to be sure that they are part of the response system. And if you look at the map that we have on the screen from this, what you can see is that the concentration of the activities around South America, Africa, and Middle East, if we look as well at IPPF's 2019 annual report data and where the clients, we were looking at clients within humanitarian settings, is similar to where they were coming from as well for IPPF. Another really key part of the response of COVID in humanitarian is advocacy. And that's because we see time and time again that SRH can be neglected as within humanitarian settings, that it's often, even though it's recognised as an international standard, it's often not always prioritised as part of the health response. And so particularly now with the impacts of COVID-19 and resources being taken away from that and focus and energy looking at the pandemic, there's even a greater risk, as many MAs themselves have reported, on SRH being marginalised. So again, some of those humanitarian actors, NGOs, UN, working in this space have put together what you see on the right, which is an advocacy document on the importance of SRH in humanitarian settings. And this captures the key points and asks we want to make. And what this fits really nicely with IPPF's overall COVID-19 advocacy framework that it's put together. And what you see on the left are examples of how the advocacy messages coming from that global forum can fit within the key principles as well we have within our IPPF advocacy document. So one example here is ensuring the meaningful engagement of civil society. So similarly within the humanitarian sector, there's an ask being put that they are part of the discussions where agencies are coming together to coordinate the response, to look at the strategies, to see how resources are implemented and making sure local partners like IPPF member associations can be part of that. There's obviously, again, that access to SRH services and supplies are key. So again, through the minimal initial service package, but also knowing that the supplies and commodities and everything we're seeing happening to the global supply chain, it's key that these are available. So this is just an example of a resource that can be used when looking at our advocacy work for SRH in humanitarian. And so looking a bit closer to home at how IPPF is working on the COVID-19 response, particularly in humanitarian settings, we're doing things both internally across the Federation and also globally that are important to highlight. And so, as many of you know, humanitarian sits within the COVID-19 task force, so it's been part of those discussions and putting together technical guidance and resources, all of which can be found on the IPPF microsite for COVID. And that includes providing support to MAs looking at, you know, discussions around adapting services, which many MAs have had to do for these settings. It's also talking about resource mobilisation, either through restricted projects and the DGERF fund. And so far to date, through the Sprint Initiative, which is a humanitarian program focused in the Indo-Pacific region, over 400,000 additional funds have been able to be mobilised for six countries, as I said, from South Asia and East Southeast Asia. And in addition to that, obviously COVID, like I said, is this additional impact, but a lot of MAs have been working on humanitarian work. So that is an ongoing part of the work and supporting preparedness and supporting capacity support in these areas. Similarly, externally, IPPF Humanitarian is engaged in different global forums, discussions and working groups to make sure that the questions, the messages that MAs are raising, the issues that we're seeing are appreciated in these forums, that the issue of SRH is raised and feeding into these guidance to make them as practical as possible, and also ensuring that we continually as well monitor the situation and as we know that humanitarian settings are very dynamic, and so that the change in the situation can change at any time. So just to say with this as well is if you are operating in these settings and have questions and are looking for resources, feel free to reach out. be pointed different directions. And then, so before we start, we started globally looking at COVID and how it is looking, the impact we're seeing across the world and some of the factors. Wanted to look at what this means in IPPF. And in the last survey, we specifically had questions around humanitarian, the impact that MAs are seeing. And what we can see here on the slide is of the 49 countries that were reporting working in humanitarian settings, 19 at least said that they expected to have severe to critical impairment. This is because of things like that raised around service delivery points that are closing, around supply shortages or blockages in supply chains, stockouts, staff being affected, hours and clients being affected. So we can see as well within our own, within across the Federation, that that impact is already clearly being felt. And so I'm going to leave it there and now this hand over to, as we go through now, the MA presentations to provide more enlightenment around how this COVID is impacting the settings that they're working in. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you, Kaya. That was great. And we'll move on to the next slide, please. We'll be first hearing from our colleagues in Venezuela, and we're lucky enough to have Belmar joining us this morning, very early morning for her, but also her colleague Carolina from WHR. Belmar is the executive director of PLAFAM in Venezuela and has been working many, many years with PLAFAM and has over 20 years of experience in SRHR, and will be sharing the difficulties and challenges that PLAFAM has faced broadly in the political crisis that Venezuela has been experiencing, but also specifically those challenges that have arisen in COVID. Belmar, thank you so much. I just wanted to welcome you and invite you to say hello to everybody before we launch your beautiful video that you've put together.
Buen día. Gracias por la invitación. Estamos muy agradecidos porque puedan conocer todas las actividades que desde PLAFAM en Venezuela estamos realizando por todas las mujeres y las niñas que están en situaciones difíciles y que se ha agravado de forma significativa con la llegada del COVID-19 y la crisis humanitaria compleja que estamos viviendo. Es interesante que nosotros podamos también dar a conocer las actividades que hacemos y conocer también las actividades que hacen otras organizaciones en todo el mundo. Muchísimas gracias por la invitación y creo que tenemos un mismo fin, que es ayudar a salvar a las niñas y a las mujeres. Gracias.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Belmar Franceschi, soy la directora ejecutiva de PLAFAM. PLAFAM es una organización sin fines de lucro fundada en 1986. Somos expertas en el área de salud sexual y salud reproductiva y somos pioneras en la atención y prevención de violencia basada en género. Desde el año 2014, PLAFAM es la única organización del país que está colocando métodos anticonceptivos de manera gratuita y accesible a nivel nacional. Y además, estamos brindando servicios de salud, incluyendo atención psicológica a mujeres que están en situaciones de riesgo y movilidad humana. Desde hace 3 años prestamos servicios comunitarios en jornadas de salud desde los mismos espacios de vida de las mujeres que no tienen acceso a servicios médicos, incluyendo a población rural y a población indígena. Durante 5 años y de forma continua hemos tenido un aumento significativo de usuarios en nuestras clínicas, llegando a alcanzar hasta un 92% de crecimiento en servicios de salud sexual y salud reproductiva, prestando más de 1,500,000 de servicios para el año 2019. En los últimos 5 años hemos aperturado 2 clínicas y estamos en la capacidad de expandirnos hacia el interior del país para poder así atender a estas poblaciones que tienen limitados accesos a servicios de salud sexual y salud reproductiva. Hemos también realizado alianzas con instituciones del Estado, con organizaciones de la sociedad civil, inclusive con el Ministerio de Salud y el Ministerio de la Mujer, para proveer anticonceptivos a centros hospitalarios públicos y además capacitar y asesorar a nivel técnico a proveedores de salud y en el área de salud sexual y reproductiva, planificación familiar, atención a adolescentes y violencia basada en género. Participamos en mesas técnicas de trabajo para los planes de incidencia de políticas públicas en el área de parto humanizado, en las normativas de salud sexual y reproductiva dirigida a adolescentes y en la revisión curricular para integrar la educación integral en sexualidad en la currícula educativa de Venezuela. PLAFAN es una organización reconocida por organismos nacionales y atendemos de forma subsidiada al 100% de las mujeres, adolescentes y niñas que acuden a nuestros servicios. A pesar de la crisis humanitaria compleja que estamos atravesando y de las persecuciones al personal de salud, a las organizaciones de la sociedad civil, PLAFAN ha mantenido sus puertas abiertas y seguimos trabajando en la provisión de servicios esenciales en la atención a mujeres víctimas de violencia y la distribución de métodos anticonceptivos, capacitación de personal de salud y en la promoción de jóvenes promotores comunitarios en el área de salud sexual y salud reproductiva. Realizamos distribución comunitaria de métodos anticonceptivos a población vulnerable, de riesgo en el interior del país, las mujeres migrantes, a las desplazadas, a las afrodescendientes, a las que están confinadas. Estas son prioritarias para PLAFAN debido a los altos costos y las dificultades para la obtención de métodos anticonceptivos. Las mujeres muchas veces prefieren los métodos de larga duración. PLAFAN los obtiene y los distribuye de forma accesible con consejerías para que estas mujeres puedan conocer y tener una mejor elección de cada uno de los métodos anticonceptivos. Estamos viviendo en un régimen dictatorial, resguardados por las Fuerzas Armadas Nacionales, con una oposición no consolidada, y esto hace que el gobierno se fortalezca. A pesar de todo esto, y con el aumento significativo de la pobreza y de la crisis que está viviendo Venezuela a nivel de infraestructuras, de servicios hospitalarios, del aumento significativo de la violencia basada en género, de los feminicidios y de la mortalidad tanto infantil como de la mortalidad materna, PLAFAN sigue trabajando. Hay 20 millones de personas que tienen necesidades de salud, de las cuales 10 millones están en situación grave. Hay un aumento significativo de las muertes en personas en confinamiento y hay un desabastecimiento y una escasez tanto de los servicios básicos como electricidad, agua, gas, transporte, agudizando también toda la parte e impactando toda la parte social de las personas que viven en Venezuela. A pesar de todo eso y con la llegada del COVID-19, los médicos han tenido que esforzarse para trabajar en condiciones precarias en los centros de salud. Hay un desabastecimiento desde guantes, tapabocas, jabón. La disponibilidad es muy intermitente. Hay interrupciones en los servicios básicos, como ya lo mencioné, y en la frontera entre Colombia, en Venezuela y Brasil, ¿verdad? Hay un aumento significativo del COVID-19 para los retornados que están regresando a Venezuela. Esto ha tenido que significar y dar una respuesta efectiva desde PLAFAN para las mujeres que acuden a nuestros servicios. Debido a esta cuarentena impuesta por el régimen dictatorial y por considerar o no considerar la salud sexual y reproductiva como un servicio esencial, PLAFAN tuvo que cerrar sus puertas durante un mes. Después de muchas gestiones por el gobierno para poder tener la permisología necesaria y obtener los salvoconductos, pudimos abrir nuestras puertas de manera parcial desde el mes de abril. Dentro de las medidas que hemos adoptado para la protección de nuestro personal y de nuestros usuarios que acuden a nuestros servicios, dada la escasez de equipos de protección, tanto para el personal como para las pacientes, hemos suministrado y estamos suministrando tapabocas, alcohol con gel a las mujeres y a los jóvenes que están acudiendo a nuestros servicios, ya que la adquisición de estos equipos y de estos insumos es muy difícil en Venezuela. También hemos adquirido a través de algunos proyectos de equipos de protección para el personal que están en primera línea y de nuestros proveedores de salud. por la escasez de combustible, hemos tenido que tomar algunas medidas necesarias con nuestros empleados y hemos designado a veces algunos de nuestros colaboradores para que hagan largas filas para hasta de 12 horas para suministrar combustible para luego ser distribuido ante los proveedores de salud. Y así poder nosotros acudir a nuestros sitios de trabajo. La atención psicológica para las mujeres a través de medios virtuales ha sido necesaria a fin de atender las necesidades en el marco de un aumento de violencia de género debido al confinamiento. A pesar de todas estas vicisitudes y estos desafíos, nosotros seguimos trabajando y PLAFAN tiene sus puertas abiertas para atender a las mujeres y para seguir manteniendo nuestros espacios de incidencia en cambio de las políticas públicas con tomadores de decisiones. Queremos facilitar y estamos facilitando servicios de salud reproductiva, disminuyendo significativamente las barreras de acceso a mujeres y jóvenes para la toma de decisiones informadas. Brindamos servicios de anticoncepción, campañas para la utilización de métodos de larga duración como los implantes y los DIU, y estamos fortaleciendo la unidad psicológica para la atención de mujeres víctimas de violencia basada en género. Seguimos con las puertas abiertas y seguimos trabajando para las niñas, para las mujeres y para nuestras adolescentes. Muchísimas gracias.
Wonderful, thank you. And I'd like to invite Carolina actually to translate the welcome and introduction from Belmar that came right before the video, if you may.
Yes, of course. Good morning, everyone. So Belmar, just wanted to say thank you for having this opportunity to share PLAFAM's experience with everyone. PLAFAM is the Venezuela MA. They have had to face many challenges during this time, but they're also doing many things to continue providing SRH services and fighting for our SRH agenda in Venezuela through this time. So she just wanted to mention that it's a pleasure being with all of you and sharing the MA's experience. Thanks.
Thank you, Carolina. And we will be sharing the video as well as the other slides after. So if anyone had a little trouble reading the subtitles, we apologize, but do encourage you to review it. And just acknowledging that on top of the already challenging infrastructure crisis and restrictions that PLAFAM has been facing in the Venezuelan context, the COVID really amplified and exacerbated this through a lack of available PPE and commodities and the fact that SRH was not recognized as an essential service and therefore resulting in the closure of those clinics, yet also seeing increases in GBV and other issues. So Belmar will be staying with us for the Q&A and I encourage you to consider any follow-up questions or thoughts you may have to share with her then. So let's move on to the next MA experience. We are now going over to Afghanistan and Dr. Shabnam will be joining us. Dr. Shabnam has been with AFCA, our Afghan MA, since 2018, and she oversees the technical services program delivery for AFCA, based out of Kabul. And she is a passionate activist around GBV and public health. And we're very lucky to have her with us as well today. So Dr. Shabnam, I will hand over to you and please present when you're ready. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Julie, for introductions. And thank you. Hi, everyone. I will start. Next slide, please. I will start with the introduction of our organization. Afghan Family Guidance Association established in 1968. We are the pioneer NGO in SRHR services in Afghanistan. We are the full accredited member of International Planned Parenthood Federation. And we have the 60 service delivery points, of which 8 are static and other are mobile and outreach service points. five static clinics are in Kabul, and one static clinic each and located in Nangarhar, Balkh, and Herat provinces. Afghan community mobile outreach are operating in six provinces of Afghanistan. Also, AFGA is running a midwifery helpline, providing technical support to public and private sector to the midwife working at the community level. Next slide, please. Afghanistan is one of the world's most complex humanitarian emergencies, characterized by escalating conflict, displacing over 1 million people. Afghanistan is prone to recurrent natural disaster. So this given underlying fragility at the economic, political, and security levels, the country is not able to cope with the consequences of such disaster, which put additional strain on humanitarian actors working on the ground. We also have a very high maternal mortality rate in Afghanistan, which we are among the highest in the region. We also have a very high unmet need and low MCPR. All these poor health indicators will even get worse by COVID-19 pandemic and will even increase the need of humanitarian assistance due to disruption in supply chain, movement restriction, and shift to focus on COVID-19 pandemic. Next slide, please. The impact of COVID-19 in Afghanistan, as the Ministry of Public Health data shows, that 26,310 people across all 34 provinces of Afghanistan are now confirmed to have COVID-19. And some 5,508 people have recovered and 491 people have died. That more than 5% of these total confirmed cases are among the healthcare staff. Our country, Afghanistan, is particularly vulnerable to COVID-19 due to limited availability of properly equipped medical facilities, inadequate number of trained medical staff, and also damaging effect of 40 years of war on social capital at the community level. And also a large influx of returnees from Iran and Pakistan during recent months. The lack of also lack of resources to support the local government in taking the action needed. And so with this fragile health system, developing economy and underlying vulnerabilities, the people of Afghanistan are facing extreme consequences from the COVID-19 pandemic. The cases are expected to facing and to increase in upcoming days. So, and also as a response to the pandemic, government has imposed social isolation, social distancing, and travel bans scale to contain the transmission, thereby avoiding a surge of demand on already strained healthcare system. Next slide, please. The impact of COVID-19 on our services, AFGA family planning and reproductive healthcare services have been impacted by COVID-19 due to disruption in supply chain of contraceptive commodities, closure of health clinics, public fare to visit health facilities, reducing their working hour year, and also reduce the mobility due to lockdown and transportation restrictions. Next slide. And what we did, the continuation of services here, what AFGA did during this pandemic, with the back-to-back consultation with the Ministry of Public Health, we have been able to continue provision of life-saving SRHR services in the pandemic. Through our 7 out of 8 static clinic in 4 provinces of Afghanistan by taking strict preventive measures such as training our staff on proper use of PPE material and screening of our client while entering the health facility. To respond to the restricted mobility and fear of women in accessing the health facility, reaching marginalized, vulnerable, and displaced population. We took the initiative of providing SRHR services through 60 community outreach midwives in 6 provinces of Afghanistan at the community level, in comfort of their homes. The midwife will reach women and girls in the most remote area of highly populated provinces where the most of the returnees and IDPs are taking shelters. So we also developed IEC material on a preventive measure of COVID-19 and distributed them to the clients through our aesthetic clinic and also community outreach midwife. And we also have a midwifery helpline, as I said before. Through our midwifery helpline, we started provision of counseling, information, and referral services to the on reproductive health, GBV, and COVID-19 throughout Afghanistan. Through MHL, we are also providing technical support to the midwife working at the community level and dealing with the complicated case of the delivery. Another thing that we initiative we took, we have installed digital telephone lines for our aesthetic clinic and share the contact detail through different social media platforms so our client may reach us from any counseling information and referral they may need regarding the SRHR services. Next slide, please. The AFGA is also participating in some clusters and working group. Actually, we are the part of these clusters since many years. We are working with the health cluster, GBV subcluster, RMNCH advocacy, and ORC committee, RMNCH working group, and SRHR committee. During the pandemic, we are mostly collaborating with GBV subcluster to report GBV cases that our community midwives come across and are working to create a referral mechanism to refer these clients for comprehensive GBV services to the family protection centers. And also through the RMNCH or SRHR Department of Ministry of Public Health, we are an active part of that committee. And we are working together with the RMNC Department of Ministry of Public Health and other stakeholders to advocate for the continuation of life-saving SRHR services during this pandemic. Next slide, please. The impact of COVID-19 on resources. In Afghanistan, health system are being provided by BPHS implementing NGOs. Because we are the part of these technical working group and committees, we came up to know that most of the NGOs are completely diverted their focus to responding to COVID-19, resulting in shortage of contraceptive community and unavailability of human resources to provide reproductive health services. And also, as per a recent monitoring visit which we received from the Ministry of Public Health, around 20 out of 34 provinces of Afghanistan were having a stock out of contraceptive. Next slide, please. I think it's finished. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Shabnam, so much for that. And it's clear that that COVID has presented additional challenges to the context for AFGA, but that this has been an opportunity that to adapt the ongoing services, and as you've demonstrated and shared from the midwifery program, to allow for outreach and being creative and ensuring that there's still access to those services. So thank you so much for sharing. We will move on. Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Shabnam. Let's move on to the next one now. Narita Williams, who is our Senior Communications Officer Advisor based in Bangkok with the Humanitarian Hub, will be presenting on behalf of our Pacific colleagues, namely our MAs in Vanuatu, Fiji, and Tonga, who had to recently respond to a tropical cyclone Harold. So Narita, let me hand over to you, please.
Thanks, Julie, and hi everyone, this is Narita, and as Julie just mentioned, I will be presenting on behalf of Robin in the Pacific Humanitarian Team, and a particular welcome to Ma, who I see is online from the Reproductive and Family Health Association of Fiji. So Ma, do feel free to jump in if you feel like I've missed anything or if there's anything that you'd like to add. So this presentation will be around what happens in an acute natural disaster during COVID-19. So we're going to kick off first with a short video that was produced for the recent donor meeting and gives a little bit of a snapshot of the response. Thanks, Kaya. Thanks, Kaya. So just an overview of Tropical Cyclone Harold. It first formed on the 2nd of April this year, and over the next 8 days until the 10th of April affected 4 Pacific Island nations. So those were Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, Fiji, and Tonga. Next slide, thanks. So Tropical Cyclone Harold first made landfall in the Solomon Islands as a Category 2, but by the time it actually hit Vanuatu, it was a powerful Category 5 cyclone. So that's the highest level of cyclone that there is. It had winds of up to 235 kilometres an hour, and it destroyed entire villages and displaced over 80,000 people in Vanuatu alone. It then continued on its path of destruction, moving southeast to Fiji as a Category 4 cyclone, where it hit the main island and the islands to the east and displaced 10,000 people there, before finally reaching Tonga, where it actually coincided with a king tide phenomenon and caused 3-metre-high surges on already low-lying islands and displaced a further 500 people there. So the humanitarian hub was successful in being awarded funds to launch humanitarian responses in 3 of the 4 affected countries, that is Fiji, Vanuatu, and Tonga. Next slide. So what does it mean when there's a humanitarian response during the COVID-19 pandemic, and in particular in this instance to an acute natural emergencies? Well, the challenges that we faced because of COVID-19 included the fact that all 3 countries were experiencing a state of emergency, which severely limited movement. So in addition to limited movement, this also meant limited transportation options and challenges in procuring essential supplies needed for the response. There was also a delay in obtaining information, including the initial needs assessment that we do at the start of every humanitarian emergency. So there was delays in getting information about the needs of affected communities. And there was also the need to draw on in-country supplies, including SRH supplies, particularly in the first few weeks of the response. This meant by necessity that MAs had to use their own stock for the response and then top up what they could through their own Ministry of Health. COVID-19 also meant that for the humanitarian team, we had to pivot the way in which we provided technical assistance. Obviously, in-country surge support was not possible, so we were offering some technical support and advice remotely. And then the teams also had to factor in another level of safety and well-being for the response teams, including risk mitigation measures in their response plans and in their proposals. But it also provided an opportunity for some innovation. So it meant that our MAs were able to use virtual training to provide infection prevention control to the response team members and the clinicians. Our Pacific humanitarian team had already procured PPE supplies for the Pacific, and these were based in Fiji, and they were actually able to get these into Vanuatu and Tonga with the assistance of the Australian government. And our MAs were also able to draw on the relationships that they already had with their relevant Ministry of Health and health clusters to obtain necessary PPE, most of which had been provided by the regional WHO lead COVID-19 Joint Incident Management Team based in Suva. Next slide, please. So during these three responses, the SRH service delivery was provided through mobile services and also through supporting national health facilities. Our responses are always based on the Minimal Initial Service Package, the MISP, which is a set of priorities which are globally agreed upon by the SRH community of life-saving SRH care that should be delivered at the onset of an emergency. And in this case, our teams are also able to upskill public health officials, provincial health staff, through having joint response teams. And our MAs recognised that some of the local health providers required extra upskilling, in particular in LARCs. So they were able to do this. And this is particularly useful in the Pacific, where in our humanitarian responses, LARCs are particularly popular. And in this instance, it was no different. Next slide, please. So what were some of the unique elements of these responses because of COVID-19 being present? So first of all, our team set up hand washing stations outside every mobile and outreach clinic site. Now, keeping in mind there were no recorded COVID cases in Vanuatu and Tonga, and Fiji at the time had only had 18. But the MA staff were able to assist in showing proper hand washing techniques to villagers during our outreach, which is something very different to what we would normally do. Whenever we provide mobile health clinics in a disaster, we always start with awareness sessions for the community around SRH. And this time around, we were actually able to couple that with COVID-19 information. And in Vanuatu, the health cluster collaborated together to create a booklet of key health messages for cyclone disaster victims. This was actually written in Bishlama, which is the local pidgin language in Vanuatu, making this booklet much more accessible to villagers. And next slide, thanks. So how did our preparedness work actually help this response? So because of our localised approach, because our MAs are in country before, during and after a disaster, it means that partnerships are already established in country before a disaster strikes. This allows rapid mobilisation of our response teams. And this, in this instance, was also critical to pooling supplies that made it easier in country to access PPE, SRH commodities and other medical supplies. Our teams also have existing partnerships with SOGI, LGBTI networks, disability partnership organisations and women crisis centres. So our response teams are able to access some of the most marginalised people in affected communities and also those who have been impacted by sexual and gender-based violence. And a capacity building that had already been undertaken previously at the national level also meant that these partner organisations themselves had already been trained in the MISP. They already knew about the core SRH services that need to be delivered at the onset of an emergency. So when they join our response teams, they're already knowledgeable in this area. So that's the conclusion of this presentation, and I'll hand back to Kaya and Julie before we move on to the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Narada. And excellent work to our colleagues in the Pacific in responding in such difficult situations there. Thanks to all of our panelists. I think that we've really covered a lot of ground here. We have seen the COVID impact and response by our MAs in a political crisis, in protracted conflict, and in natural disasters across the world. So this is really quite an interesting and varied presentations from everybody to see how the challenges are the same in some places and different in others, but really strategies have been adapted and in a very effective and efficient way. And that those mechanisms and investments in preparedness prior to COVID really enabled quick responses. So thank you again to all of the panelists. I would now like to welcome questions, comments, thoughts from our attendants to our panelists. And please feel free to write anything into the chat box or to raise your hand, and we can go from there. Okay, great. I see a hand raised there from Bongani. Would you like to unmute yourself and ask your question? Bongani, are you able to unmute yourself? Or type into the chat box what your question is. Okay, we may have lost that. While we wait for more questions to come in, I may like to just kick off and ask a question to Belmar. In terms of the crisis in Venezuela, what is the number one concern in terms of the impact that this will have, COVID will have on women and girls that PLAFAM supports through the services? And Carolina, if you could interpret that would be much appreciated.
Yes, absolutely. Belmar, están preguntando que cuál es el impacto, el mayor impacto que se considera va a haber sobre las niñas y mujeres que atiende PLAFAM a causa del COVID-19.
El mayor impacto es las limitaciones que tienen ellas en la obtención de métodos anticonceptivos, porque para el Estado... todo lo que es el tema de planificación familiar y colocación de métodos anticonceptivos no es esencial, no es un servicio esencial. Entonces se les dificulta el poder obtenerlo y están confinadas y están de alguna manera obligadas a embarazarse por, si no tienen una alternativa como un método anticonceptivo alternativo que puedan ellas comprar o ellas puedan adquirir, ¿no? De forma gratuita o en algún tipo de servicio público o privado. Entonces creo que eso ha hecho, hemos visto, aunque las estadísticas no están totalmente divulgadas por el Ministerio de Salud, hemos visto un aumento en embarazos no planeados, en nuestras consultas, por ejemplo.
Okay, so let me translate. Belmar says that the greater impact will be in the acquisition and access to contraceptive methods. For the Venezuelan government, as Julie mentioned initially, SRH and the provision of contraceptives is not an essential service. So women and girls are having difficulties accessing these products and services. And so in a way, they are forced into pregnancies that they don't want, as they cannot find the contraceptives, and if they find them, they do so at incredible prices. It can be around 1,000% of what the minimum salary is. So she says, Belmar says that even though the government hasn't published any statistics, they have seen in their consultations now that they reopened that there is an increase in unwanted pregnancy among women and girls.
Great, thank you. And I see just some follow-ups to that comment from Belmar related to what is the access to abortion services in Venezuela. and what guidance can be provided in this type of restricted setting.
So, Belmar está preguntando como un seguimiento a la pregunta anterior, que cuál es el estado del acceso al aborto en Venezuela y qué recomendaciones se pueden dar a las mujeres en estos momentos.
Sí, el estado, aquí legalmente el aborto no está permitido, salvo si corre peligro la madre, ¿no? En el momento del embarazo, del parto. Por tal motivo, se le hace más difícil a las mujeres acceder a servicios de aborto seguro. Siguen habiendo abortos clandestinos. PlaFam es una alternativa para esas mujeres porque ellos acuden a nosotros para las orientaciones y para poder nosotros trabajar el tema de la interrupción del embarazo, ¿no? Que si es de forma ilegal en Venezuela, pero de alguna manera lo tratamos de hacer lo más seguro posible, ¿no? Para que ellas puedan tener otra alternativa que no sea el estar embarazadas si no lo desean. Pero acá en Venezuela es ilegal la interrupción del embarazo. Las mujeres realmente, si no acuden a servicios que le puedan prestar ayuda, están obligadas a estar embarazadas o a interrumpirlo de manera muy, muy riesgosa.
Okay, so Belmar says that the status of abortion in Venezuela is completely illegal, except for when the mother's life is at risk. But there's a lot of difficulties in accessing services or even information. So PlaFam is a source of information. They provide counseling through the risk reduction model. Harm and risk reduction model, and so they have become an alternative for women when dealing with unwanted pregnancies. They try to provide them with all the information so that they can make decisions about their pregnancies in safety. If women don't go to services such as PlaFam, they don't have options, and probably they'll end up having clandestine abortions and putting themselves at risk.
Great, thank you for that, Belmar. Let me, there are two questions here along the lines of youth and how how youth have been impacted by COVID-19, as well as sort of opportunities to engage them. Dr. Shabnam, I may ask you, from your perspective with AFCA, what are the particular concerns around youth and COVID-19, and have there been opportunities or strategies to engage them through AFCA services or ideas in which we may be able to do that more effectively?
Thank you so much, Julie. This pandemic also has very major effect on the health and well-being of youth. The most of the cases that we receive through our social media platforms, youth are mostly dealing with mental health problems like depression, anxieties, and panic among them. So AFGA Youth Network, during this pandemic, we are, through our social media campaigns, we are reaching these youth and connect them to the youth health line, as we have in the country that's running by UNFPA. We connect them to the other services, to the youth health line, through our social media campaign, through our social media platform. That is about how they can deal with their problem during this pandemic. And also, if they need any SRHR services, we can connect them to our static clinic and how they can reach us. And if they are living in the community, we can connect them to our community outreach method. They can provide, get the access to the community level. And also, we had before the CSE program to our school setting and also peer education, but during the pandemic, these two services affected a lot. But we are, with the team, we are working to use the telemedicine, to use the social media to reach these youth and provide them services.
Great, thank you, Dr. Shabnam. I do see a hand raised, ADEPF. Would you be able to unmute yourself and ask your question? We may be having trouble with the unmuting.
I might try to unmute all from the attendees.
Okay. Great. In the meantime, we'll come back to that to you once we're able to unmute. There is a question here to both Plafam and AFCA around uptake of services by the community. So in terms of, have you seen clients concerned with coming to the service delivery points? Or is there a preference of one type of service delivery point over another? So let's start. Carolina, if you could interpret that for Belmar, that question around uptake of services by the community members, and if there's a preference of the type of service delivery channel that they're using.
Of course. Belmar, preguntan que si se ha observado en la comunidad algún temor o preocupación para volver a acceder a los servicios, que si hay alguna preferencia por parte de los usuarios acerca de un tipo de punto de entrega de servicios o, u otro.
Sí. No, las comunidades realmente están a la espera de que nosotros podamos regresar otra vez para el suministro de los servicios de anticoncepción y de atención médica. Hay preferencias por los métodos de larga duración, como los implantes o los dispositivos intrauterinos, y las comunidades se están acercando a las clínicas por sus propios medios, y por tal motivo nos vimos de alguna manera, si se puede decir, presionados un poco por las mismas mujeres para abrir las consultas, porque ellos nos escribían por diferentes redes, se acercaban a las clínicas preguntando por los servicios, inclusive las comunidades, ya empezamos a trabajar con algunas comunidades, siempre con prevención y con el tema de bioseguridad para nuestros proveedores de salud. Las comunidades están siempre prestas a que nosotros vayamos hacia ellas para poder ser atendidas, porque somos de alguna manera su única opción.
So Belmar says that there weren't any concerns or problems with the uptake. It was in fact the community through social media and other networks that were insisting that Plafam reopened, and they have been attending the clinics and accessing the services by their own means. As Belmar mentioned in the presentation, there is no public transportation because of the fuel shortages, so they walk very long hours to get to the clinics, and they have been also working in some of the communities, of course, following all the preventative measures and using PPE and all to protect their staff and clients from COVID-19. But yes, in fact, it was the women and girls who pushed them to restart their provision of services and contraceptive provision as well.
Great. Thank you, Bamar and Carolina. Over to you, Dr. Shabnam. It did seem as though there was some hesitance to continue to come to the static clinics among the clients. Has that changed? Are there other service channels that they're more willing and interested to access? Or what have the trends been there in Afghanistan?
Since the pandemic outbreak happened here in Afghanistan, people, due to lockdown restriction movement and also fear, they stopped coming to our static clinic because of these reasons. So that's why we started, we resume our community. But yeah, since the onset, they stopped coming to our study clinic in the urban areas. But after that, after in recent and in the month of June, we come up to this. We are seeing that the people, the women and girls, are start coming again to our static clinic. But during these 3-4 months, yeah, our at the static clinic, our client are decreased too much. But at the community level, we had a very good result in the community level. But and also in Afghanistan is a country that the woman cannot go to a health facility without informing their husband or mother-in-law like that. And also we are the underline of poverty also. So the people, the women are willing to receive the services at the community level. They cannot go to the health facility because of too many reasons. That's why they are willing to receive the services at the community level. But in the aesthetic clinic, now our clients are improving every day and the clients start coming again to our aesthetic clinic.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Shabnam. It is working. Great. Wonderful. Over to you for your question.
Hi everyone, my name is Abdallah. I'm the Executive Director of Djibouti Association for Family Planning. My question is for Belmar. So I'd like to know your experience regarding the provision of CSE program in this political and COVID crisis in Venezuela. There is, if you use other tools than social media, Facebook page, or other tools or application to provide CSE or to reach those beneficiaries from the school area or out of school area. So I may ask her directly, in Spanish maybe. So, hola Belmar, gracias por tu presentación. Voy a preguntarte en español, intentar al menos pues. Quería saber sobre su experiencia a propósito de la provisión de la programa de educación sexual completa en esta crisis política y del COVID también. Si ustedes han desarrollado una aplicación que permite a los jóvenes de acceder a esos programas aparte de Facebook o de las redes sociales. Gracias.
Hola, gracias por tu pregunta. Nosotros hemos trabajado desde hace más de 3 años con el Ministerio de Educación para poder introducir en la currícula educativa todo lo que tiene que ver con educación integral en sexualidad. Fuimos invitados a participar desde el Estado y con otras organizaciones y bueno, fue un trabajo bastante interesante. La revisión curricular tiene muchos años acá en Venezuela para que se pueda aplicar. Lamentablemente no se ha hecho como una política pública efectiva, ¿sí? De alguna manera esto no ha permitido que los jóvenes desde las escuelas puedan tener un acceso a conocimiento sobre el tema de sexualidad, en educación integral en sexualidad. Más sin embargo, hay algunas acciones favorables, inclusive desde el mismo Estado, que hemos estado apoyando, como algunos servicios de salud amigables para jóvenes, por ejemplo, de manera gratuita, han sido asesorados por nosotros en algunas en alguna época, antes del COVID, ¿no? ¿No? De la llegada del COVID, que se ha paralizado bastante todos los servicios. Y han habido algunos intentos porque esto pueda llegar a la mayoría de los jóvenes. Sin embargo, bueno, no han sido tan efectivas estas políticas públicas desde el gobierno. Y desde PLAFAN hemos trabajado no solamente con las redes como Facebook o como Instagram, que tenemos muchísimos seguidores de jóvenes, sino que también hacemos trabajos comunitarios con jóvenes, los formamos como promotores en el área de salud sexual y reproductiva, también hacen sus labores sociales, que es obligatorio legalmente acá para poder ellos acceder, por ejemplo, a las universidades y también para poder graduarse en las universidades. Ellos tienen que hacer labor social, muchos lo hacen en PLAFAN, y eso también nos permite llegarle a un mayor número de jóvenes, ¿no? En el área educativa, por ejemplo. Y en las comunidades hacemos trabajos comunitarios con formadores de promotores en educación integral en sexualidad. No sé si respondí tu pregunta.
Sí. Gracias. Muchísimas gracias. Gracias.
Okay, let me translate for everyone else. Belmar says that PLAFAN has been working with the Ministry of Education for the last 3 years to introduce in the curriculum of Venezuela, SRH. They have done this, well, it's been a long review, but there hasn't been an issue of a new public policy that is effective. So through the public education system, the youth has not been able to access CSE. There have been some other initiatives by the state to open youth-friendly services, and PLAFAM has been providing advice and technical guidance for this. But there hasn't been a huge change or impact on these initiatives for youth. On the side of PLAFAN, they're working through the social networks like Instagram and Facebook, where they have a lot of young followers. But they're also doing community work. They train youth promoters on SRH, and also there's an ample reach with this strategy because it's part of the social work that youth have to do before they go into college, and they also have trained youth promoters at the community level to disseminate and teach people about SRH.
Great. Thank you, Carolina. So in our last final minutes before we close, I would like to invite each of the panelists to just identify or say one key advocacy message that has come out of this combined humanitarian crisis versus COVID reality for them. And to share that with the group. This is recognizing that, you know, COVID has exacerbated these humanitarian contexts, not just from being a health crisis, but also a protection crisis and a socioeconomic crisis that will have additional impact on these populations beyond what they've already been challenged with. So, I will go through, invite each of the panelists to just share their one key message that if they had an opportunity to share with this group and for us to echo in our various platforms and forums that we engage with, what would that be for them? So let's start, Dr. Shabnam, with you, if you don't mind. Dr. Shabnam, do we have you still with us? Okay. I'm not sure if Dr. Shabnam can hear me or let's go then. Carolina, if you could interpret that for Belmar, maybe Belmar could just share her brief message to end on.
Yes, of course. Belmar, Julie está pidiendo que des un mensaje clave para el advocacy en términos del impacto que ha tenido COVID-19 sobre la salud sexual y reproductiva y la protección en términos de violencia basada en género. ¿Cuál sería ese mensaje que compartirías para poder también compartirlo con nuestras redes extendidas y bueno, del aprendizaje que ustedes han tenido en esta crisis?
Sí, creemos que el seguir trabajando a pesar de las circunstancias ahorita con el COVID es importante para las mujeres. las mujeres están ahorita en una situación más difícil porque están confinadas muchas veces con sus agresores, muchas veces no tienen acceso a servicios de salud sexual y reproductiva y se ven obligadas inclusive a embarazarse. Y creemos que las organizaciones como las nuestras debemos seguir trabajando a pesar de todas las circunstancias que estamos atravesando cada una. Venezuela en estos momentos tiene una crisis compleja, humanitaria, desde hace unos años atrás, pero seguimos trabajando y Plafán sigue brindando los servicios. Con el COVID se ha agudizado todo esto, pero igual necesitamos que las organizaciones como las nuestras puedan seguir prestando auxilio a las mujeres y a las niñas a pesar de las circunstancias.
Okay, so Belmar says that the most important message that she could share is that organizations like ours, like Plafam, must continue working in spite of the circumstances because they're sometimes the only alternative for women to avoid unwanted pregnancies and to access contraceptives and SRH services. Women at these times are confined with their aggressors and they don't have access to services. So the most important thing is to support organizations so that they can continue working. Venezuela is undergoing a complex humanitarian crisis for a couple of years now. And Plafam has continued to work because they are aware of the importance of their work for women. And COVID has only deepened these difficulties, but they went through all the efforts to continue providing their services because they think it's vital for women.
Great. Very important message. Thank you. I think we still aren't having Dr. Shabnam with us. Nerida, did you want to? Oh, do we? Kaya?
No, not that I could see.
Yeah, I think she dropped off, unfortunately. Nerida, did you want to share one closing key message from your side?
Sure, Julie. Yeah, happy to. I would say that the biggest advocacy key message that I would like people to take away is that natural disasters do not stop happening even when there is a pandemic occurring in the world. In fact, we are just only now entering into the biggest cyclone season. It will run from now until November. The monsoon season is near upon us as well. So it's important for RMAs and in fact for the entire humanitarian community to ensure that funds are not diverted away from essential SRH services in natural disaster settings, and that our MAs in country are prepared to provide responses even during the COVID-19 pandemic, and whether that's by having PPE pre-positioned, having risk mitigation tactics in mind, and also having those key partnerships in countries which allow us to launch humanitarian responses with a much greater degree and effect. Thanks.
Thank you, Nerida. And Kaya, any final thought from your side in terms of a key takeaway?
Thanks, Julie. No, I agree with what everyone has said, and definitely that we know SRH situations in humanitarian settings, like, they don't stop. They, in fact, can get worse. So it's really essential that through our advocacy and the support that work that MAs are doing on the ground, that do what we can to ensure that message about SRH services being essential, SRH services being life-saving, continues during this COVID pandemic, and particularly in humanitarian situations where we know the risk is high.
Thank you, Kaya. Dr. Shabnam has returned, it seems. Dr. Shabnam, if you can unmute yourself and share your final message, that would be great. Okay, the mute is not working. Are you able to put it to write it into the chat box, and we can share it with everyone. And just to say, this has been such a rich opportunity to hear from the various MAs in the work that they're doing. And we do encourage and support further investment in the work that's being done, both on the preparedness side and on the response side, for the very, very many MAs who are operating in humanitarian contexts in very different ways, and at various scales and different scopes. And the fear is, of course, that that COVID will only exacerbate these situations in the coming months. And so the more investment and support that we can do in mitigating the impact of COVID in these environments, the greater suffering and impact that we can avoid in the future. So let's see if we have...
Yeah. Yep. Julie, can I talk? Yeah.
Dr. Chapman, is this you? Wonderful. Yes. Please, let's hear from your final thought, please.
Yeah, thank you so much. And sorry, I lost you in between. And thank you for this informative session. It was great. And my message is to key to reducing MMR, mortality, maternal mortality rate, is birth spacing. And that for that, we need to secure family planning contraceptive now more than any more before. That's my message. Thank you so much for everyone.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for your inspired presentations and participation. All the best to everyone. Please stay safe and healthy in these times, and we look forward to our continued work together. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Thank you all.